Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Down the lane, picks it off to Jack, slam dunk at the wire. Down to Donovan Jack, over Woodbury, basket counts and a foul. Washington Jack lays it up and in, and Penn State leads 65-59. What a play by Isaiah Washington.
That's why he's out there, Steve. He's playing his heart out.
Blocked by Jack, and he knocked it away from Udolph out of bounds.
Speaking of playing his heart out, how about Donovan Jack, Steve, with 17 points, a couple of blocks. He's playing like a wild man out there.
Far wing Washington for three. Nope, rebound batted by Reeves to Taylor and Gordon. Woodbury rebound down the floor. Here's Clemens, top of the key, leans it. Stripped by Garner. And the Nittany Lion basketball team upsets fourth-ranked Iowa 79-75.
Well, the top stories of last night as Duke rallied to beat North Carolina, Texas Tech beat Oklahoma, Penn State beat Iowa. Those are the top three stories in sports last night. I guess that's our play-by-play call of the day, huh?
Down to Donovan Jack, over Woodbury. Oh. Basket counts and a foul. A spectacular play, and the Nittany Lions have a chance at a Donovan Jack three-point play.
Steve, they had the whole defense up by half court. You can't sit there and hold it.
Dick was unbelievable last night.
He's on fire.
Dick was unbelievable last night. I told him afterward, I said, that's probably the best game I've ever heard him had. And he's had, of the 360 games that we've done together somewhere in that neighborhood, we've done 360 games together, if not more. That's the best game I've heard him do. And he's had some unbelievable nights. I'd say of the 360, he's had a bunch of really good ones. He's probably had 200 that are great. And last time, probably the best I've ever heard him. He analyzed the game, and he does it in a way that other people have no clue how to do. I mean, no clue. I think on TV, I think Jay Billis does a great job. There's certain guys out there that are actually really good. Jay Billis does a really good job. I like Jim Jackson. I've had the privilege of doing a couple of games with Jim Jackson. I like Jim personally, and I like him professionally. I think he does a really good job. There's certain guys I think that, when it comes to analyzing, when Steve Kerr was an analyst, he's one of the best I heard. He was great. I think Doug Collins is great. Wish he'd do more college games. But, you know, he's with the NBA, which I completely understand. Dan Dockage does a good job. We've had Dan on the show twice, right? Dan Dockage does a good job.
Just had him on last week, didn't we?
No.
No, I'm thinking of Scott. No, I was thinking of Scott Dockerman. Sorry, wrong guy.
Yeah. Yep, Scott was on yesterday. And we had Scott on 2 weeks ago, too, when we were out in at Iowa. But that's then after that, there starts to be a fall off. Although I will say this, the most entertaining, without question, is Walton.
There is not funny the other night.
A single analyst in America that will play a glockenspiel
while wearing a Cal Bear hat.
Oh, he wears shorts, you know. He's wearing shorts during the game.
Oh, yeah. And it was almost like a Hawaiian Bahama-style shirt.
Amazing. But it's a big, and you know, twice in 11 days, Penn State's been one of the top two or three stories on SportsCenter and on CBS Sportsnet and on SiriusXM and on NBC Sportsnet and on FS1. You can't put a price on that kind of publicity when you pull it off. Duke, North Carolina was number one. Oklahoma, Texas Tech was number two. And there was Penn State, Iowa. And Penn State, Iowa was in the two spot until Oklahoma was beaten by Texas Tech a little bit later in the night. It was a big win for Tubby Smith-Stein. They won three games in a row. Now in Lubbock. I know we're trying to get Brandon Gowton on. Evidently, we're having a problem with the phone system.
That is correct. and the phone system's back, just like that. Wow, you're magic.
That's because through a pure force of will. Hockey, by the way, we're going to have Tommy Olczyk on tomorrow. Yes, he is Eddie Olczyk's son. He's playing in his senior season at Penn State. Tommy's going to join us on the show tomorrow because it's also a big weekend for ice hockey here at Penn State. It's senior weekend. They have crossed a lot of barriers in this hockey program along the way because essentially what Guy Gadowski did and has done is started an expansion team. And there are certain programs at Penn State that were always considered to be sleeping giants. The wrestling program was one. I think everyone felt the wrestling program at Penn State was a sleeping giant. And if you put it in the right hands, it was going to explode. Well, it turned out the right hands were Cale Sanderson's. I think everyone felt that when it came to hockey, at Penn State in hockey could be a real force. Because the brand name, and then, of course, now when you're done with Pagula, that's why I laugh with Scott Radisic. We had Scott Radisic on the show last week talking about the facilities review here at Penn State. I said, how long did you spend at Pagula? 5 minutes? He goes, that's someplace. when the facilities guy who knows more about facilities than anybody in the world looks at you and his simple response is, that's someplace, that tells you how good it is. And I was talking to Ben Clymer, and Ben played in the NHL for years. And Ben's going to work the game tomorrow night. I'll be between the benches behind the glass tomorrow night. And I've worked with Ben before, and Ben says, you know what? He says, all the places I've been in the NHL, he says, there's only one place that's comparable to this in terms of, like, the actual facility, weight room, hot tub, cold tub, the whole facility. And I said, what's that? He says, Toronto. I said, that's it. Brandon Gotten, BleedingGreenNation.com. Brandon, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
RG3. What's the story you're hearing on RG3?
Well, it seems like he's destined to be a free agent. I mean, you know, Washington has Kirk Cousins, and the contract talks between those two have reportedly cooled off, but it seems like it's inevitable that they're going to reach a deal at some point, or if Washington has to franchise tag him, the worst case is scenario for them. And that means, you know, Washington isn't going to keep RG3 because he's due a really high cap number. It's only guaranteed for injury, but it just doesn't make sense for them to keep him in this year. So he's going to be a free agent, and you know, the Eagles need a quarterback. There hasn't been anything too solid about him necessarily coming to Philadelphia, but you know, you wonder if you know that's a guy the Eagles would like to take a chance on because you know, look, you know, the Eagles, like I said, they need a quarterback. I think they're in a situation where they should try to get a quarterback in multiple different ways, just like the Seattle Seahawks did a couple years ago. You know, they drafted Russell Wilson. They traded for Charlie Whitehurst. They signed Matt Flynn in free agency. I mean, this is an approach the Eagles need to take where they need to invest, I think, you know, multiple or put their eggs in multiple baskets instead of all just going all in on one player.
Wow. That's big. What about Sam Bradford? And what about the possibility of franchise tagging him?
Yeah, it sounds like that's not going to happen. We've seen Adam Schefter report that the Eagles don't want to franchise tag Bradford. Also, Les Bowen of the Daily News in Philadelphia reported the same thing. So it sounds like the Eagles aren't comfortable with that number. It's going to be around $19 million, almost $20 million for 1 year on the franchise tag. So I don't think the Eagles are itching to pay him, you know, because not only because the production is questionable and he had a good seven-game stretch to end the season, but the injury history is still a big concern. And when you're franchising a quarterback like that, you know, it's a big commitment, and you kind of have to make a long-term decision on him. You know, like how much do you really believe in him? So it seems like maybe the Eagles would have some interest in bringing him back on a team-friendly deal, but I don't think Bradford and his camp and his agent is Tom Condon, who's one of the more aggressive agents in the league. He's gotten big money for his quarterbacks. He doesn't really take team-friendly deals like that. I don't really see the incentive for Bradford to come back on a deal that isn't friendly to him.
Exactly. All right, on your checklist, March 1st is coming up, then the next big deadline's March 9th. What are a couple of things on your checklist you would like to see the Eagles get done?
Well, there's the Walter Thurman situation. He's going to be a free agent, and he was a very, you know, I think he added a lot of value to this Eagles defense in 2015, but you know, his fit in this new Eagles defense under Jim Schwartz is a question mark. You know, do they view him as a safety? He had never really played safety before last season. Do they view him as a cornerback? Money might not be right for to get him back, so you might have to let him walk if he's not really going to be a scheme fit for the defense. But if you can try to keep him, I think, you know, again, he's a valuable player. With Bradford, I think the Eagles really shouldn't rush into any kind of deal there because I don't think he's the kind of guy that you need to really overpay. And obviously, if they're not going to franchise tag him, they don't feel like they absolutely must need to keep him because they could always just tag him and try to work out a deal later. So from now until agency starts, I don't think there's too much of a rush to get too much done because they did re-sign Vinny Curry already, and they got some of their younger players under contract who weren't going to hit free agency this year anyway, Zach Ertz and Lane Johnson, but they got those guys wrapped up. So from now until then, the next period of activity will be not only just free agency itself on March 9th, but also that little window that opens on the couple of days beforehand where teams can start talking to player agents and kind of get, you know, a glimpse of what the market's going to be like. The Eagles kind of had a deal in place already with Byron Maxwell at that time last year before free agency even started. So that'll be the next pocket of activity for the Eagles.
The NFL Scouting Combine is next week in Indianapolis. If you had a recommendation for Eagle fans as to what position or positions they should take a longer look at than others, what would it be as they watch an NFL Network?
Well, we've been talking about quarterbacks now, so obviously that's a big one. I mean, reportedly all the quarterbacks are going to throw, which is good, you know, because in years past, sometimes you have guys who show up, and they don't throw, so that's kind of disappointing. Now the Eagles will at least get a chance to look at all of these guys and see how they do. That's obviously a big position where, you know, they might need to draft a guy at 13, especially because they don't have that second round pick. And then you look at the offensive line, obviously another big need. I mean, you could say that the Eagles really need two starting guards. Jason Peters is going to be 35 after this season. Sounds like the Eagles want him back for this year, but you know, he's a question mark moving forward. So going to be looking at offensive linemen, guards, tackles. There's plenty of needs on this Eagles team.
The Jason Peters situation, 35, struggled with some injuries this year. How much more do you think he has left in the tank, Brandon?
You know, it's a good question because he's getting up there and he reportedly has a degenerative back condition. So, you know, those things aren't really good when you're talking about aging offensive linemen. But the thing with Jason Peters is he's such a special talent. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he's not your average left tackle by any means. This guy's a future Hall of Famer. He's a physical freak. He's huge. He's a great athlete. So I think the Eagles really feel like they can get one more year out of him at least. I think, you know, this isn't like Chip Kelly's offense and Chip Kelly's scheme where and Chip Kelly's practice schedule where he really pushed his guys hard. I think this is going to be a situation where they kind of let Jason Peters rest throughout the season during the week in practice at times. We've seen other NFL teams do this. Tony Romo, for example, with the Cowboys, he doesn't practice every day. I think they give him Wednesdays off or so. And same thing with Calvin Johnson prior to this offseason, whether he may retire or not, same kind of deal. They kind of let him take it easy during the week in practice. So I think the Eagles are hoping they can get at least one more year out of Jason Peters before moving Lane Johnson over to left tackle. And then maybe the offensive lineman the Eagles draft or sign this year can move out to right tackle to replace Lane Johnson.
Well, when it comes to getting up there in age, actually, I am. All right. Thanks so much, Brandon. Appreciate the time very much.
Hey, thanks for having me. Take care.
Brandon Gobin, BleedingGreenNation.com. As Kevin hangs up the phone. Back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
One 800 795 9565 is our number. 1-800-795-9565. Love to hear from you. We'll talk Penn State basketball in the final half hour. Guests from the Black Shoe Diaries will be on to talk with us. Looking forward to it very much. Kevin is driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
Yeah, the 2017 Hyundai Elantra. The 2017 came out a little bit early because they wanted to show off the redesign. They gave more leg room in the back, made the seat a little bit more comfortable, actually made the whole vehicle seem a little bit bigger, even though it's basically the same wheelbase as it was before. Plenty of trunk space and a lot of great tech features include Apple CarPlay and Android Auto capabilities. When you plug your phone into the USB, it will actually transfer your phone to the dash screen, the screen on the dash of your car. So not only will you have your apps that are available on the screen, but makes calling a lot easier and a lot safer, too. Just one of the many great features, including crash detection system available and lane assist. It's all on the new 2017 Hyundai Elantra, and gas mileage right now back and forth just on the, in town, not highway, 32 in eco mode. That's pretty impressive. Check it out at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury. You can also see it on my Facebook and Twitter feed at Kevin Herr.
Every car has a crash detection system.
Yes, but this one will alert you if you're not paying attention. That's the difference.
That thud you hear.
Right. This is prior to the thud. Yes.
Ah, I see. This prevents the thud.
Right. Right.
800-795-9565. I actually had mentioned yesterday, I was hoping Dick from Milton would come in, call in, because I wanted to get his assessment of the Penn State heavyweight, because he saw him at Lehigh. I've never seen him wrestle before. And whether or not he's got something in the tank that could help Penn State here down the stretch, because obviously he's going to be the one that gets the call on Sunday against Oklahoma State. So if Dick has a couple of minutes to call in, that'd be great. At 800-795-9565, because I'd like to pick his brain for a moment and get his assessment of somebody he's seen that I have not seen. So we'll throw that out there for him and see if he takes the bait. 1-800-795-9565. Yeah, it was a great win for them last night, basketball-wise. And again, did they play over their head? They didn't. That's the odd thing about the Indiana game and the Iowa game. Really, except for maybe hitting a couple more threes last night. See, I always feel like they're capable of hitting 6 to 9 threes in a game. You know, are they open threes? Are you getting the ball where you're stepping into the shot? Those are good shots. So I have no problem with them taking them. And I think that other than that, they out-rebounded them. And look, if it's not for the free throw line, Iowa doesn't hang in the game, to be honest with you. They don't hang in the game. When you're playing a game and in the second half, the other team never once has the ball with a chance to come down and take the lead, you've done something. You've done something. That tells you the kind of control you have over the game. And Shep Garner is going to get a lot of credit for knocking down four threes last night. He was 4-7 and scoring 14 points. No doubt he deserves a lot of credit. But you know where I give him a lot of credit? After he did that, he allowed Penn State to play the game at its tempo and not at Iowa's tempo. He orchestrated and controlled the tempo of the game in the final 20 minutes. And you can't put a price on that when you can do that. He's in a spot where, for example, Anthony Clemens guarded Shep almost all night. Clemens is probably one of the top five or six defensive guards in the Big Ten. Shep did a good job last night. And Clemens has played really well the last month, especially. But last night, Shep was the better player. Talk more about in the next half hour. Your next game is what? Friday night? Tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night at home against Montoursville in the PIAA Class AAA quarterfinals in District 4.
PIAA quarterfinals.
That is correct.
Don't you have districts too? Or
well, this is the District 4 quarterfinals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I wish this was a quarterfinal in the state game. That would mean they're playing well into March.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, that was a torturous 5 minutes.
You started it.
While the rest of you were hearing about Trump versus the Pope.
It was Kevin versus the Pope.
Hey. Anti-charter school, anti-Catholic school.
I am not anti any school. I'm just saying it shouldn't be broken up the way it is.
Oh, you're just.
I got an idea.
Personal.
Let's develop a charter school. Let's build a charter school. Ironically, it'll be all guys that are really athletic and girls that are really athletic.
Great, we'll call it Her Tech. Now have you changed your idea about your charter school?
And here's the beauty of it. You don't have to live in this state. You can even live in California. We'll actually bus you here.
I just think that you have a chip on your shoulder, that's all.
No, I can't. I'm not denying it. I don't like it. It stinks.
Well, I mean, the Pope would have responded to you, except he was too busy worrying about Trump.
I know. I'm building a wall, okay? I'm building a wall around public schools. Yes, it's wrong. I know.
I mean, no offense. I think he thinks you're small potatoes. All right. Time now for our sports bozo of the day.
And it's not me in that last conversation. I'd like to get that crystal clear.
Maurice Ashley, a chess grandmaster, faced off against a trash-talking player in Washington Square Park and saved a surprise for him at the end of their match. I mean, I'm sorry, but trash talking in chess makes you the bozo of the day.
How do you trash talk in chess? How do you do that?
I can't believe you moved that rook. I can't believe you moved that rook. Your rook can't move. Your rook can't handle me. Your knight can't. Your bishop can't take me out.
Your queen can't move. Your queen's in trouble.
I mean, I'm sorry. You trash talking chess, you're the bozo of the day.
Why does One Night in Bangkok start running through my head now? Now that you're talking about that.
Well, I had to do something funny because, I mean, when it came to the charter school, Catholic school thing, man, you were going crazy. My goodness. I almost had to go to confession for you. All right.
Let's bring in Chad Markelese from Black Shoe Diaries. Chad, you sat there and watched the game last night at the Jordan Center. When did you really start to get the feel that Penn State had something in the tank last night?
Oh, it started out pretty typically for a Penn State game. You know, cold shooting. Iowa's such a lanky, long team, experienced. And it just seemed like another repeat of the matchup in Iowa City. And then Shep Garner started to hit some threes, and it seemed like they got a little confidence in them and in all their jump shots, really. Donovan Jack was just unbelievable. You know, 8 of 8 from the field. Took Woodbury off the dribble that one play. It was, you know, that you don't see that from him ever. So really, everybody was just playing with great confidence, and I think it's, you know, it's a testament to Chambers to get him back playing with confidence after that horrendous second half in Lincoln.
I want to get to the fact that not just it's Donovan Jack, but what do you think it means to Penn State when they can get a third scorer as a complement on the floor?
Oh, it's huge. Usually that guy is Peyton Banks, but last night it was Donovan Jack in addition to Brandon Taylor and Shep Garner, and you can see there's just more options on the floor. There's more, you know, it's more wide open. You have two guys you have to worry about, and you have a third. It's just tough for teams to match up against the inside-out presence of Brandon Taylor, the deep shooting of Shep Garner, and whoever that third guy is. Last night it was Donovan Jack, and he was just taking Adam Woodbird to the woodshed all night.
When you look at Isaiah Washington's game, and particularly the second half, he had 4 first-half turnovers. What did you see in the second half from Isaiah that you had not seen before, Chad?
Yeah, he really grew into the moment. He's been settling for jump shots a lot this year, and it doesn't always work out. He's, you know, somewhere around the 15% mark on the year from the three-point range. And last night when Mike Gesell was guarding him, you know, very close on the perimeter in a man-to-man set for Iowa, Isaiah decided, you know, to take the ball to the rim, and he got fouled twice on a back-to-back plays where Penn State could use some points. And that really got him going. And he was a terror on defense the rest of the night, getting hands in shooters' faces and forcing turnovers. So that was, you know, he really matured in the last 5-10 minutes of that game.
That's an excellent point. Excellent observation. I thought the same thing in watching him play through. It just looked like he made a couple of plays and suddenly the confidence grew in him. Shep Garner's floor game. Obviously, Josh Reeves was forced at times to play the point last night. And there were a couple of turnovers that were not Josh Reeves' fault. In fact, those couple actually were on Isaiah Washington. But Shep had to play the point last night. How did you feel he did in controlling the pace and the tempo of the game from that spot?
Yeah, he was huge in that regard. I mean, it was the same kind of formula they had against Indiana where, you know, Iowa and Indiana, they love to run, they love to push the ball and control the tempo and get the game disjointed because they have the athletes and the talent to really just spread the floor and get wide open looks. And they really could not do that last night because Shep was so good at breaking that press that Iowa had all night. And he just played under control the whole game. I thought it was a really impressive performance with Devin Foster back in Ohio to witness the birth of his child. Just a really mature performance from Shep.
All right, so now we watched this play out last night against them. Now they've got Rutgers. Give me the importance, Chad, of them having a little killer instinct here and saying, okay, let's string something together here and not have what happened in the second half of Nebraska.
Right, well, Rutgers is there for the taking. They're, to put it lightly, they're one of the worst major conference college basketball teams, statistically speaking, over the last 5 to 10 years now. And they are also now without their star freshman guard, Corey Sanders, who's been suspended for 4 games for a violation of team rules. So they're really hurting for players even. They have 7 scholarship players available. And Penn State's not been great on the road, this year, aside from, the win at Northwestern. So this is a really great opportunity to string together 2 wins, like you said, and get some confidence going to a reasonably manageable rest of the Big Ten slate where, you know, if they can maybe win 4 of the games remaining, they could be in the NIT picture if all things work out.
Yeah, because to me, I'm looking at Rutgers, and I know Rutgers still has 2 games with Minnesota, believe it or not. But I'm still, for Rutgers, I'm thinking to myself going in there, they're thinking, okay, here's a big stand for us right here on our home court. And I think Penn State has to come out, and they got to be 10 points better than that.
Yeah, Rutgers definitely views this as an opportunity to finally get that elusive win this season. Like you said, they played Minnesota twice, and those games are going to be interesting, to say the least, with Minnesota also not having a Big Ten win yet.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Rutgers, this is, you know, Eddie Jordan's under a lot of pressure right now, and they could really use a win for his job security.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. What about the schedule Penn State has played? I've talked about this many times, but I just want to get your feel on it. Going into last night, they had played 12 conference games. Only four to that point had been in the Jordan Center. What was your thought on how this thing was scheduled out for Penn State?
Well, I mean, Penn State's not one of the premier teams in the conference, obviously. You know, the Big Ten does have a tendency, that whether they like to admit it or not, that they will cater towards some of the bigger names in the conference, the blue blood programs. And Penn State did, you know, they had the game in Madison Square Garden where they took the home game there. But, you know, it's not favorable. It's not going to be favorable for a team like Penn State. It never really is. So I guess just the way that they've been able to battle through that, those first 8-9 games where they got a few wins that they probably shouldn't have against, you know, Iowa, Indiana, Northwestern on the road even. It's shaping up nicely towards the end here now, but they've done a manageable job. So
I'll
far.
Say this, the schedule's turned for them. Now it's up to them to take advantage of the schedule turning. Down the stretch, what will be some things that you will watch for besides the obvious wins? I mean, you've got to get some wins to show that true progress, but what are a couple things you're going to look for, especially in some of the younger players, Chad, to try and set a table for next year?
Yeah, I'd like to see more from Shep, more of the same from Shep that we saw last night. You know, he's capable. He has the talent. It's just, it seems like a mental thing sometimes with him where, you know, if he's missing some shots, it's tough for him to really get in the flow of the game and do what he can do. And, you know, the young guys, Josh Reeves has all the talent in the world, all the athleticism in the world. He just has to work on his, you know, just tweaking some little parts of his game. He does all the little things very well. And the seniors, you know, this is a real chance for them to put a stamp on their Penn State career because, you know, Brandon Taylor, Donovan Jack, Jordan Dickerson, Devin Foster even, they haven't had the most success at Penn State, you know, under Chambers. And if they can, you know, finish strong and really create a memory for themselves and for this program to build on next year, it'll really be something special for them.
Chad, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. It was great to have you on the show and great to have your insight as well.
As always, Steve, thanks so much.
Chad Margulies joining us from Black Shoe Diaries. We will come back, wrap it up. Well, wrap it up in terms of like the last 10, 12 minutes at a moment. 800-795-9565. We'd love to hear from you on News Radio 1070 WK.
I don't see you guys rating the kind of mate I'm contemplating. I'd let you watch. I would invite you, but the queens we use would not excite you. So you better go back to your bars, your temples, your massage parlors.
Well, okay.
I told you that song was running through my head when you talked about chess.
Chess trash talking.
And that's what Murray Head's doing all in that whole song, is chess trash talking. That's why it popped into my head.
Well, I'm glad I was able to drive the hatred out of your head for charter schools and
it hasn't done that. It's not a hatred of the schools. I'd just like to see the playing field changed.
Where it benefits you?
No, or I think it benefits everybody. I thought when my thought was that this new classification alignment would actually kind of balance the field out a little bit more, and it doesn't look like it's going to work as well as anybody thought. Now, it hasn't been put into effect yet, so I'm going in open-minded next year, but, you know, when you have teams in the East having to drive almost to Pittsburgh to play a game, whether it's football, basketball, wrestling, or whatever, that doesn't work out right. And that doesn't help anybody, especially the school who has to pay for the bus trip out.
Hmm. Okay. Boy, you're awfully bitter. Okay.
I got on a Dennis Miller rant there for a minute.
Nobody could tell. Okay. Want to talk money for a second? I know you hate money.
Oh, no, I love money. Don't get me wrong. I love money when it's in my pocket.
Okay, if you want to know how the world works, how the sports world works, here's Penn State's financial report that they just released today. What sport do you want to start with? You want to start with football?
Actually, you know what I'd like to start with? And this is going to sound strange, but I would love to know. Volleyball's been very successful for Penn State.
Women's volleyball.
Right, right. Women's volleyball's been very successful on the floor.
Women's volleyball brought in $884,394 last year. $884,000. Okay? So I'll just round it to $885.
Okay.
And the expenses were $2.2 million. So they operated $1.3 million in the red.
That's not as bad as I thought it would be.
Okay. What's next? What do you want to know next?
Let's see. How about field hockey?
Let's see. Expenses were slightly over $1 million, $1,045,000. And the revenue was $476,000. So they lost about $550,000. They in the red.
That's not too bad then. And then now yep. I would have to think that hockey would be doing well based on attendance.
Men's ice hockey $3.9 million in revenue, and in expenses $3.284 million. There's $700,000 in the black.
How many? I wonder how many
about
hockey teams.
About 650 are in the black. Good bunch of them are 650 in the blacks. So that's really good. Yep. The women's team though loses about $1 million.
Now, let's take a look at wrestling. I know we've talked about that an awful lot.
Wrestling, $1,168,000 in revenue. It's a really good number.
Yeah, I would think.
Mm-hmm. They lose $500,000 a year. The expense is $1,640,000.
Now, here's the question that everybody asks you, Steve. Let's say, now I realize they have to pay rent for the Bryce Jordan Center, and so does Penn State basketball for that matter, which to the average person, including me, is baffling. But that's a whole other topic. I'm not going to get into that.
It's an interdepartment thing, and Housing and Food Services has the rights to the building.
No, I mean, I understand how or why it happens, but that's a whole different issue.
Okay, before you ask your question, I'll just give you a football number. Penn State's $35 million plus in football. And in men's basketball, Penn State makes $6.2 million.
My question was,
$35 million in football, $36 million in football plus side, $6.2 million in men's basketball.
So my question is, if wrestling...
So, why don't you be thankful you get basketball? All right.
If wrestling were in the Bryce Jordan Center every night, every home match, which you could assume safely, I think, that they would sell out, or at least come close
can't.
To it.
And no, you can't. And here's the reason why. The reason why Kale is really reluctant to do this is the Wisconsin dual meet. The Wisconsin dual meet bothered him. They had two dual meets in here.
Refresh my memory on that.
This year. It was December, I want to say.
Well, what was it that bothered him is what I mean.
They weren't close to selling it out.
Was it close to the holiday or break?
It was in the middle of December. Couldn't have been in a better spot.
That's interesting.
Again, they have been really intelligent about who they put in the Jordan Center. They put Iowa in the Jordan Center. Automatic. They put defending national champion and the brand name Ohio State in the Jordan Center. I mean, they've been really smart about this. Really smart about it. Dick brought up the Pitt dual meet the other day. I mean, the Pitt dual meet, you know the whole thing about tickets versus people who show up? They had 5,200 no-shows. My apologies, I was wrong, but 4,200 no-shows based on tickets versus people in the building. That's a big percentage. I mean, that's a huge percentage. I mean, the drop count on the Pitt wrestling beach was only 11,700, you know.
Now, how many does Rec Hall seat?
What, 5,900? And then everything's gone. I mean, they could have wrestled Oklahoma State in the Jordan Center. I think they would have sold it out this week.
It's a shame there's not something in between. To me, Rec Hall seems small for wrestling, but I was only in it once, and it wasn't a wrestling event. It was, well, actually, your event.
Yeah, but in between. Basketball it should have in between, too, though, Kevin.
True.
I mean, the Jordan Center is too big
for
basketball.
You're right.
You know, and the Wisconsin thing bothered Kale. I mean, I talked to him the week of, and that's one of the reasons he's hesitant about going in there.